Remaker's Mark Podcast, Episode Alpha, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Welcome to the Remaker's Mark Podcast, where we remake our favorite movies just for you. Today is part two of our discussion of the 1987 film Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. So far, we've talked about recasting the roles. So we talked about recasting the role of Neil Page, originally played by Steve Martin, and the role of Del Griffith, originally played by John Candy. So thus far, we have decided upon John Cusack as the role of Neil Page in our remake. So the role that was originally made famous by Steve Martin will now be played by John Cusack. And the role of Del Griffith will be played by Kevin James. So great picks, guys. I think Joe Hollywood is going to be really happy about that. Any thoughts about that?
I think they are great picks.
It's going to be a hit.
Yeah, I can't wait to let Joe know.
I actually just got a call from Joe Hollywood. He's already given it the green light.
Nice. We're in the money.
Our budget is only $4 million, though.
Well, it'll be an artistic project for them both. I'll assume they'll take zero. So we also decided, and one of the things that we're doing here, as we discussed in the first half, is whoever had the best all-around choices, or in this particular case, happens to have a birthday tomorrow, will be the quote-unquote big winner, and that was Andy. So Andy, do you maybe want to say, yes, congratulations on making sufficiently satisfactory choices and being born. Do you maybe want to say what our next movie that we're going to discuss is?
I'd be happy to, and thank you for celebrating the anniversary of my birth.
Old man.
Yes. Not the oldest, but old.
Thanks.
Chair.
Thanks.
For our next movie discussion, this is something that we've been batting around an idea for a long time. It's one that I think we're all very familiar with. It's very near and dear to our hearts, both in just in terms of being movie lovers and being nerds. We're going to discuss the 1984... supernatural comedy classic, Ghostbusters.
All right.
Yay. I like it. Yay.
That makes us all winners.
It makes us all winners.
Here, here. Next. Excellent. I like to hear that. So we will be discussing that in the future going forward. But for now, let's continue our discussion of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. So far, we've talked about how we would recast both major and minor characters. And now is a chance to address how we would want to change the plot of the film, or what filmmaking aspects could go into that, what technology aspects go into that. But before we do that, I just want to say thanks again to our friends at Tipsy Pixels. They've done some great promotional consideration for our show here. They're pretty much the coolest event around Minneapolis, and that is no small feat. It's a video game competition held in a bar. So far, they've done Mario Kart 64, and they have done Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo. And the next one coming up on November 12th at 6 o'clock at the Triple Rock Social Club is Super Smash Brothers Melee on the Wii. It's a blast. I missed the Mario Kart one, unfortunately, but I was at the Street Fighter one, and it was a hoot. Everybody had a great time. It was a lot of fun. In addition to being able to compete there, you can also go off to the side where they have other video games going. They had Toe Jam and Earl going, which was pretty awesome. They had Mario Kart going. So you can get your game on without having to compete if you so choose, and beer. So that's good. If you want to find out more about Tipsy Pixels, you can do so on Facebook at facebook.com/tipsypixels. And then if you want to find out more and follow them on Twitter, it is at Tipsy Pixels. So I also would like to maybe introduce something here that's a little bit different, a little bit outside of the norm here. I would like to do a segment that we call Defend the Indefensible. Defend the Indefensible involves two of our panelists here. In this case, Mark. Say hello, Mark.
Hello.
Hello. And Lee. Lee, say hello.
Hello.
Excellent. As people get to know our voices, we won't have to do that. But for now, we need to figure out who's who. I know who you people are because I know you people. Not everybody knows you people yet. So what Defend the Indefensible involves is us saying a statement that really could not be more wrong and terrible and almost inconceivable to consider, but yet you, two panelists, Mark and Lee, you have to defend that statement, no matter how much it hurts you and no matter how terrible it feels inside, in your inside places, you have to defend that. Andy, do you have the question ready to be read?
I do. And
all right,
man, this one's going to be a doozy. The question will be read. Mark, I believe you will go first. You will have 30 seconds in which to defend the indefensible. Lee, you will be allowed to retort with the same 30 seconds.
All right.
Gentlemen, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is a great example of a buddy comedy done in a slightly different way than usual. However, the finished product pales in comparison to what could have been had John Hughes gotten his first choices in Jeremy Irons as Neil Page and Gilbert Gottfried as Del Griffith. Mark?
Mark, start us off.
Well, I have to say, first of all, that the resume of Jeremy Irons speaks for itself, both in its breadth and its depth. But I'd like to point out in particular that
15 seconds.
That both of these actors have had their trust placed in them by the great publisher Disney, and they've both been asked to be feature voices of animated characters.
Time. Do you want to do it that way?
That's a good argument. I like that. That's Lee, you've got some work ahead of you, but I have faith in you. Are we ready with the new timer, Mr. Andy? Are you ready to go?
The Armatron $20 digital watch is ready to go.
Very good. Lee, would you like the question reread, or do you feel comfortable with this?
I think I've got it.
All right. On three. 1, 2, 3.
Jeremy Irons can do the, I wouldn't say the best, but a very convincing German accent. And I think that if he were to play that, if he were to incorporate that into the character of Neil Page, I think it would be superb. And Gilbert Gottfried, since he was the Affleck duck, every line should be Affleck. And I think that would be perfect.
Time.
Very good. Very good discussion, gentlemen. Jer, you are the judge, jury, and executioner for this. Who is the winner and who is going to be sent home, but not really?
Well, I was on board with Mark's argument, except for one small detail. Hmm. The voices that Disney gave to Jeremy Irons and Gilbert Gottfried were both antagonists. Not protagonists as they would be asked to play in this role. So I'm going to have to give it to Lee.
Yay!
Huzzah, Lee.
Congratulations,
huzzah.
Lee.
And mine was just about the voices.
Don't get hung up in semantics. Nice work.
Exactly. Take your victory lap and run proud.
Thank you. I have to go home, which means staying exactly where I am.
Yeah.
Congratulations. You've reached non-movement. Okay, so that was Defend the Indefensible, one of my favorite segments here at Remakers, Mark. So next, we are ready, after much teasing and possibly hemming and or hawing, to discuss how we would remake Planes, Trains, and Automobiles when it comes to a plot perspective or to a tech and a filmmaking perspective. So we've talked ahead and thought about some areas that we would really like to focus on for this. And the first one is one that I think is going to come up pretty often, and it's one that we really talked about when we were formulating Remakers, Mark, which is the fact that the internet exists now and, you know, didn't in many of these movies that we're going to be discussing. And how does that change things? So as Mark, you put it, the obligatory internet question. Does having more access to phone and internet change the plot? Are they able to find taxis or hotels? How does that all work? So Mark, do you maybe want to kickstart that conversation and we can chip in?
It turns out I do.
Wonderful.
So I think this is really a question that everyone must ask themselves when they remake a film. And for us in particular, a long time has passed since 1987 when Trains, Planes, and Automobiles was released. And I think a payphone really plays a pretty prominent role in the film. Especially in the first half, Steve Martin's character Neil Page makes phone calls to his wife at home really whenever he can. And, well, I think it would be a given that in this day and age, he would have a cell phone and really wouldn't have to go out of his way. He could just call whenever he wants. Does anybody have any thoughts on whether or not that actually... the question, does that actually change this film?
I think it changes it in almost immeasurably if we were to truly throw in the modern day technologies, because if Steve Martin's character, if Neil Page was truly this business executive, he'd have some pretty high level smartphone, which meant that if he was late getting to the airport, he would get online and change his ticket on his phone. He would book a hotel he would do everything from his phone. So I think if you were to handcuff that aspect of the film, you'd have to throw some monkey wrench in there to prevent him from using his phone. He loses his phone, gets stolen, or he, you know, drops his phone in the urinal while he's checking his email while he's peeing, or, you know, something like that, so that we take that whole element out of the picture. Because I think you'd almost have to do it, or else the movie really wouldn't be that funny.
I think I have two thoughts on the matter. One of which is, at the beginning of the movie, much of the situation is brought on by choices that he makes or that he has no control over. So choices that he makes is, he does get held late in the meeting, but then he tries to book a taxi. So maybe now he could book like an Uber cab or something like that. But I think ultimately he's going to go out there and try to catch a taxi cab. That's his first thing that made him late. And then the weather came in, and you can have an idea of what the weather is going to do, but you have no control over airplanes. Planes are grounded now, just like they were grounded 25 years ago when this was made. So that's a big part of it. And I think the second part that I would consider is, if he had a cell phone and he checked in repeatedly at home, whether it be text message, email, phone, I think the empathy that you feel towards, his wife in this case, who gets occasional calls, yes, she is worrying in the original, but I think that it would change it from worrying to aggravation in a much quicker way. So instead of just being worried about his safekeeping and how long it's taking, I think he would have to describe the scenarios. He would have to describe what's going on. He'd have to talk about the fact his wallet started on fire and he has no cards. You know, if I told my respective other that happened, they probably would not be too pleased with that. So I think it fills in a lot of those gaps that you don't see in the original one, which I think you can kind of write yourself. It's like, you know, Hitchcock says that which you don't see is the scariest, or I think that can be emotionally the same way. So I think if you introduce him calling her all the time, I think that could be like, he would want to call her, but he doesn't really have an update to give. I'm still in a crappy situation, sweetie. Sorry. You know, and I think that could change her into a more active, frustrated role.
And to tag along with that, even though we are in the golden age of communication right now with cell phones and the ability to do just about anything except time travel and flying cars on our cell phones, there's still travel mishaps that happen. They happen to me every time I travel. They happen to everybody. It's not like the fact that we have cell phones and the ability to change itineraries and get rental cars from our phone and do this and that hasn't changed the fact that traveling is still one of the most aggravating things that you can do, especially for business.
Well, it's still because, Jerry, you spend every flight huddled in the fetal position from takeoff to landing.
Okay, that happened one time.
And just because it was to Egypt, now all of a sudden it's become your thing.
I don't like flying over deserts and oceans, okay? Now, my point being that some of the how he got to this point may need to be rewritten, but travel calamity is still there. It still happens.
It's still a very universal theme that everyone can understand.
Yeah, and empathize with how, oh gosh, that now? Wow, that's tough luck, man.
Yep. I think, you know, getting back to like the original Marxian original point about, you know, the internet and phones and all that stuff, I think now that everybody has all this, we almost, I don't know, you don't talk on the phone as much. At least I don't. Even though it's more accessible than ever. And maybe introducing it into this storyline, maybe that's the same for Neil Page and his wife. Maybe he doesn't call her more than once the entire movie, but when he gets home, you know, it's a little bit more significant when he does see her because of what he's gone through to get there.
Mm-hmm. Like, so he's, instead of calling her, he's just sending text messages or emails instead of actually having a conversation. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah. And, you know, in doing that, you kind of miss out on that intimacy.
Yeah. I think that's a good point that, I mean, I used to have a little reminder to myself to always check the number of minutes that I've used on my phone because I was afraid I'd go over. And now it's laughable whenever I do it because I use only a fraction of my talking minutes every month, you know, because like I said, that's not what we do on our phones anymore.
Right.
But yet it's, you know, the days of having actual conversations. And especially if it was at a point in the movie when he's really at a low point and just feels like he needs to, you know, hear his wife's voice or, you know, hear a comforting sound like that, that even if he doesn't even think, oh, I should just use my phone to call her, instead he's like, you know, keep sending texts or whatever and doesn't really make that connection. Like, oh, I can actually dial her phone number.
Yeah, exactly.
Or it'd be interesting if he wanted to dial a phone number and realized that he didn't even know what his own phone number was. Yeah. Because he never uses the phone in that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, and really, like Del said earlier, half the stuff that's happening, like, do you really want to tell somebody who's at home worrying about you, by the way, the car started on fire, my wallet was in there, and so everything melted. Also, we drove the car through a hotel room. Like, but I'm fine. Don't worry about it. Like,
it's all happenstance.
It's better to tell that story in person once I get there.
Rather than just seeing all the photos on Instagram.
Ooh.
Exactly.
I think one example of having done that well was the original Hangover movie where, you know, all this calamity is happening and they keep getting phone calls and they sort of selectively decide when to take the calls and when to ignore them and finally get to the point where it's like, you know, the, you know what has hit the fan and we have to tell this bride to be what's going on and what's happening. And I think that, you know, you kind of have that every time that you hear a phone ring noise, you're like, oh, is this going to be the one? And then they put it off. And I think that when they do, it has weight in terms of the badness and then eventually the goodness that comes from it as well.
Yeah. It does build up the tension of like, every time they put it off, it just notches it up a level. They're going to have to pay that price eventually kind of a thing.
Yep. Very good. And Lee, kind of tying into that, you had brought up a point about the money side of things. You know, they happen to have, you know, run out of money. They switch Diners Club cards. And I just love that Diners Club is a thing here because I don't think that's still around. I don't know. I didn't look at all. But, you know, so how would that play? I mean, you know, it's not as though like with a cell phone, you can walk up to, you know, and pay with Square everywhere you go. I mean, something like that. But, you know, there is certainly more frequent, more easy access to money now and how that would work. Do you want to touch on that a little bit?
Well, yeah, and I was thinking about just the number of cards that everybody carries now and how accessible money is. And, you know, for this story, it would have to be, the scene where they get robbed. I think that would have to be moved up way early, and it would have to be probably within, you know, shortly after those two meeting each other, for the rest of, you know, for the challenges that they face to play out. But yeah, I was just thinking how strange it was that, wow, why does he only have a gas card, a Neiman Marcus card, and a Visa? You know, that's ridiculous now.
Yeah.
FYI, I think a credit card is still a thing.
Oh, very good. Good research, Andy.
Thank you.
How about Neiman Marcus?
I think that's still a thing. Tickety-tickety-tickety-tickety. Very good. Any other tech thoughts or anything like that you guys want to discuss with that?
I forget if they use it in the movie, but kind of going along with that, old travel currency versus current travel current currency. traveler's checks. Like, that used to be, if you were going to travel anywhere, you had to get your money converted into traveler's checks. So if it got stolen, oh, well, it wasn't a big loss. Like, that's just something that to me seems so foreign or so obsolete that it would be kind of the same thing. That would be, you know, we're all kind of, I think, hammering the same point home, but it's like that issue would have to be addressed very differently. And I think Lee brought up a good point, like, you know, even means of accessing money, which could, again, be through a cell phone, be, you know, all sorts of different things would have to be removed or somehow impaired early on to make that story feasible and or interesting.
Yep.
And Neiman Marcus is also a thing.
Excellent.
Funny. You know, I think about, you know, people now who have their identity stolen in one way, shape, or form. I mean, it could be that, you know, if so they have their wallet stolen, now it's not just cash, or it's not just one credit card, but it's like your life. And so many of those things are tied together. And I think people, you are more reliant upon so many things electronically now that I think in a current remake, you could make that be much more, while you do have more access to things. I think if someone is given access to your information, so maybe like his laptop gets stolen and then everything gets wiped out from bank accounts, email, the whole nine yards. And then you're really at step one again. So, you know, there's lots of different little choices like that could be made to end up with a similar type of result. Andy, you know, it's funny that you talk about traveler's checks. One of your items to move on a little bit here is, you asked, how would this play in Europe or, you know, in Asia or anything like that? I think, you know, the holiday element would certainly be different. I think there's a Canadian Thanksgiving, but it's in a fictional month that
Canada's
doesn't occur or so. I don't know.
It's in Smarch.
Yeah, this Canadian lousy Smarch weather.
J.R. Tolkien invented Canada.
Exactly. So, you know, what would that be like, in a different country, in a different land? How would that work? So talk about that.
Yeah. I know I was thinking a little more towards, setting this in Europe. In a previous life, I used to travel to Europe for work pretty regularly and kind of got a sense of what that life was like. And I was thinking, let's say these are two businessmen who work and, you know, in Amsterdam, and they have to get from Amsterdam to their homes in London, or, you know, as an example. And for most people, that would be a quick flight from Amsterdam to London and not a big deal. But let's say, you know, if you remember in the news in the last year or two, when that big Icelandic volcano erupted and grounded pretty much all air traffic out of Europe for a couple of weeks, and it really messed things up. So that would cause a lot more, you know, confusion in terms of how to get from point A to point B. Jared had brought up a different point in another discussion that trains, for unless you kind of live on the Eastern Seaboard in the United States, trains aren't really a viable or, you know, a first choice for transportation. But in Europe, I think that plays very differently, where trains are a very common and, you know, central part of transportation for a lot of people every day. So you could get into things like, you know, shuttle boats across the channel, you're getting into taxis and high-speed trains and, you know, horses and buggies in the countryside and this and that. And I think it would allow for a little more of a romp around Europe that could be fun. It could be beautiful to look at. It could be all sorts of different things. That was the main gist of what I was thinking.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I mean, it gives an opportunity to reset so many of those creature comforts. You know, it's talking on a phone in Europe is different. It's a different signal. You know, everything is different. The wall plug is different. So,
I mean, that could be,
you know, their phone could die. And all of a sudden, if they're someplace where that is not an easy thing to get to, then the phone is taken out of the picture.
In most urban Romania, you know, they don't have the adapter for it, I can guarantee you. And in Europe, you know, the Christmas holiday is a big deal, but it's not. I think it has a different. Well, I suppose Planes, Trains, Automobiles is set around Thanksgiving, which is clearly an American holiday, and there's not an equivalent in Europe. But the summer holiday in Europe is a really big thing, especially essentially the month of August. Most of the continent just kind of shuts down, and everyone goes on holiday. So I was thinking this could be reset in the summer, which could then add some interesting weather things if it was really hot and stifling, and they were stuck somewhere and couldn't get into air conditioning, et cetera, et cetera. But it would be a good corollary to when pretty much every airport and travel hub in Europe is congested because everyone's trying to get from their home to their vacation spot. So that's kind of what I was thinking.
I've got another little spin for you.
Spin me.
Put this on and see how it spins you. I like the idea of Europe. For all the reasons that you mentioned, but who's to say that it doesn't have to be exclusively in Europe? What if it's the two businessmen trying to get home for Thanksgiving from Prague to Chicago?
Yeah, that would be a very cool thing. I mean,
so now you've got trying to get, or, you know, maybe it's not even, maybe they're getting, you know, from, they got to go to Prague and then catch this flight to this flight. Then that's going to be their, you know, their cross-Atlantic flight back to Chicago or New York or wherever it is. And so now you've got an entirely additional leg of that journey that has to go right, but it somehow goes wrong. And
yeah.
So now you've got additional modes of transportation, additional legs of transportation they have to accomplish. And I think that would really add to a lot of that. And then just the fact that it's not that I'm not going to get home to see my kids Thanksgiving. I'm not even going to be, I could be stuck in Europe for mm-hmm. Thanksgiving.
You could go, you know, in the EU, out of the EU, you know, traveling to Norway, to Spain, to Greece, to Russia. Yeah, I think that would be a fantastic idea. And then finding out the best way. That's a big part of when I was traveling to Europe. A lot of the people I was traveling with were actually American consultants who would be flying from all different points within America, essentially converging on Amsterdam. So I think it's a very realistic and feasible thing to try to present. I like that idea, Jer. Spinning very well.
Well spun.
Well spun,
yes. Spidery Jer.
Thanks.
Mark, do you have any thoughts on the matter? You're kind of quiet. Is everything okay?
Fine, thanks. Move on. Nothing to see.
Perfect. Carry on.
Mark, do you hate travel?
Yes.
It just turns out that these were, in fact, not the droids he was looking for. So there's that. All right. So the next one is something that I had brought up, which is, I think, you know, part of the subtext here. And in rewatching it, it actually was more gentle and more subtle than I thought it would be. You'll have to forgive my voice crack that I'm going through puberty. It was more gentle it's and more subtle time. Than I thank you. Tell me about it, man, that I thought it would be, but it was kind of the subtext of two guys traveling together, and it builds toward the scene where they share the hotel. And I didn't really remember the specifics of it other than the all time classic line. Where's your other hand? It's between two pillows. Those aren't pillows. I mean, that's a great line. And I remember that. And I think that's really, really funny. And I think they did a good job considering, you know, 25 years ago, the portrayal of gays in the media, I think was very different than it is now. I think it still has a ways to go, but you know, I think that, it was much more potential to be a punchline than it is now. And I thought it was handled surprisingly gentle. So like, you know, how would that be remade today? How might that be different in a similar situation, or what might that look like nowadays? Does anybody have any thoughts on how that could be changed to either make it more sensitive, or might it be that because we're more comfortable talking about that now, it might even be more outrageous? Like how do you think that would shake down?
I think it would be almost like an out of place joke if it was redone in a remake without much change in context, because I think it would seem like an exaggeration, or you know, you're trying to force a laugh simply because the times have changed, and I think it's not perceived to be as outrageous as it was then. That being said, I think it was part of what I got out of that joke was less of, oh, it's two heterosexual men who are, you know, cuddling, but it's part of it's John Candy and Steve Martin that are doing it. It's the juxtaposition of those two, and the fact that, like, you know, I think it's John Candy kind of nibbling on Steve Martin's ear a little bit. Like, you know, there's some tenderness there that's really, really funny that I think even if they were a gay couple, it would be kind of funny to watch just because it's those two actors that are doing it. So I think, yeah, I don't know how that could be done today and still be as funny as it was.
Mm-hmm. And let's even, if we want to, we can even go as specific as, with the casting changes we made in mind. So with John Cusack, in the Steve Martin role, and with Kevin James in the, Del Griffith role and the John Candy role, like, you know, what could that look like and feel like? I think it would actually work out pretty well, even if done almost verbatim, almost very, very similar, you know, other than the fact that it would be completely rehashing what came before. But if we chose that, if we made an artistic choice to do exactly as it was before, I think it could fit pretty well. And I think it's in line with what, similar content has been. There's nothing immediately coming to mind as far as an example, but I think it feels tonally pretty similar, and I was very pleasantly surprised to that. And Mark, you had a point about how would it change if the main characters were women?
I was really intrigued by that thought. I think a lot of the of the interactions in the film or would change with that premise, but that scene, that hotel room scene in particular, I think would be a unique challenge. There is something just very, I think we would view it as absurd, just very comical about that idea of Steve Martin and John Candy cuddling. Yeah. Well, and spooning, literally. I think remaking this film with women in that scene, the filmmaker would want to be very careful to make it not sexy.
That would be a very tough thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it would have to come down to the casting choices and just how the scene is played. But yeah, I mean, we are in a different mode when we think about homosexual interactions between two men versus the same interaction between two women.
I agree. I think you hit the nail on the head, Mark, when talking about the casting changes because I could see Melissa McCarthy doing this in a very funny way with another woman. You know, I think she's got that kind of that comedic timing about her that would make this a very funny scene, provided that she had someone who also had that same kind of timing. So
I agree. And I would love to see this scene with her and, you know, maybe a Tina Fey as we mentioned before, or Kristen Wiig.
Ooh,
and they have a good chemistry.
They've proven it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then
I think,
go ahead, Jer. Sorry.
I was just going to say, I think even beyond that particular scene, if you think about the movie as a whole, casting it with two women instead of two men, some of the other jokes would. If you just take the movie, like you said, verbatim, some of the other things I think wouldn't they would fall flatter, or they would feel different,
contrived maybe,
and contrived. Yes, I think that, and I'm trying to not stereotype because that's not what I'm trying to do, but Hollywood tends to make the arguments between women more catty. And I don't think that there really is ever a point until that last scene in the hotel room that Steve Martin's character, Neil Page, ever really throws Del Griffith under the bus or mocks or ridicules him as a person. And Joe Hollywood tends to like when two women obviously don't like each other or are supposed to not like each other in roles in a movie, they snip at each other and there's a lot more subtext to everything that they do. And there wasn't that in this one because both characters are genuinely pretty sweet characters and neither one is the bad guy. Like I said before, the world itself is the bad guy. And so, it would just be an interesting writing change to make sure that didn't happen. And then you've got scenes like the wiping his face with the underwear in the sink, which had the
classic.
giant pair of underwear and the socks and the.
And I like how they're just kind of grayish too. Those are clearly not new underwear.
Yeah, that scene was done so well.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of the other scenes in this film, I think, would pose an additional challenge in just like the very, very real and scary danger of things happening to women while they're traveling by themselves.
Very true. Mm-hmm.
You know, they end up hitching a ride with a creepy truck driver. They end up in the back of a big rig.
Mm-hmm.
They get, you know, taken for a joyride by a different cab driver.
Mm-hmm. Who happens to have a taxi full of naked women, or all the pictures. It's I think Boobies, taxi cab company or something, or Doobies maybe.
Doobies.
It's like, yeah. Every picture in the inside of the cab is naked women. Like how that's absurd when it's two guys. It's offensive if it's two women in the movie and they're sitting in that. I mean, that's an entirely different spin for even just for something as small as that moment.
You can make thank you. You can make creepiness very, very funny. You know, but there still is that that thought that has to lay back there, that there's a real danger of sexual assault.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. So what if we decided on my admittedly superior choice of Melissa McCarthy? maybe I'm a little bit biased, but I don't think so. And we went with John Cusack. So let's say it was those two casting. How would that change things? I mean, obviously there would certainly be a sexual chemistry there, or would there not? I mean, I really think it would be more interesting if it was exactly the same as if it was in the original one, that they despised each other and they still had that kind of cuddling scene and they still had the same reaction. Like, I think that would be more funny than if they were fighting off this like kind of ongoing attraction thing. And in talking about Melissa McCarthy, I think some of the roles she's been given, they hypersexualize her for that reason, that she does that so well. And I would just want to avoid that. But what do you guys think about that, about having a male and a female and how they would counteract that way?
I think that dynamic changes the mood of the movie drastically, especially with the fact that the Neil Page character is married and getting back to his family. The Del Griffith character, as it turns out, was married and his wife died, passed away, left him. I don't
died,
remember.
Died.
That's what I thought. Those two things could still be in the movie. You could have a character who's a widow and now just sort of is homeless and wandering around and just is this trying to make the best of life. And then this other character just wants to get back to his family, and whether or not that relationship is strained or not. But as soon as you put those two characters together and they're an opposite sex, everything changes. And that scene towards the beginning of the movie when Steve Martin calls his wife and he's like, yeah, I met this guy and we're going to share a hotel room together. And she's like, what? That would be a very different phone call if it's, I met this girl and we're going to be traveling together to try to get home. And she's really great and helped me. And oh yeah, we're going to get a hotel room together.
Yeah, that would, it's a whole different set of circumstances. It would be interesting if it got to the point where they're sharing the hotel room together, and if we were mimicking that kind of cuddle scene, if there was, you know, an element at play in which, you know, John Cusack is just devoted to his family. He's this exasperated, frustrated, tired business traveler who's just trying to get home to the comforts that he knows. And if Melissa McCarthy was in this, and we don't really know much about, like, if she could kind of play this jovial, optimistic character, but she doesn't really let anybody into kind of her personal life, which is kind of what Del Griffith does. Like, he doesn't really, you know, he puts on a front and says just enough to kind of get you to stop asking questions. You know, I kind of get that sense about his wife. He talks about his wife, but he doesn't insinuate that my wife has passed away. So he kind of gives you enough information to kind of satisfy you and let you go about your way. So if she was doing that same thing, but then kind of reveals that she's kind of lonely, but at the same time, if we get into that cuddle scene where she kind of becomes very tender and, well, you know, opens up to the side of her that she didn't intend to reveal, that, but could still be, I think it could be very sweet and endearing, but at the same time, very funny when they all of a sudden both wake up and realize what they're doing and, oh my God, you know, I think it could play both ways in that scene.
I think that if you were to do that, especially if you were to keep a scene like that in, you would either need to, prior to that point, really play up the fact that John Cusack is devoted to his family and he has no interest in cheating on his wife, or you need to take it the other way and have that be part of this whole journey that he's taking, that maybe there is some struggles at home and kind of going back and forth on that. Which I don't like that choice. I think that movie's been made before. But
a number of times.
You made it. Yes. But if you made it clear that, you know, I have no interest in, you know, I just want to get home to my family, love my family, blah, blah, blah. You're really annoying. And you treat it as if it was the same roles of John Candy and Steve Martin. Then I think that played correctly, that scene could really be funny, especially with the shock of, oh my God, he did cheat on his wife, and then realize that, no, this is a terrible, terrible, terrible misunderstanding.
And those are not pillows.
And those are definitely not pillows.
That could be played at an entirely different angle as well, having breasts.
Yep, absolutely.
By the way, the Blu-ray release of this movie is entitled the Those Aren't Pillows edition.
Nice.
I guess it is the archetypal line from it. That's pretty good. Okay, well, that was a good discussion, guys. I like that. That's good. I think we thought of a lot of different angles there. That's good. Yeah, Jerry,
good game.
Good game, everyone. Hold on, we got one more. So Jerry, you had a good question here, and I think this ties into remake culture or even sequel culture in general, but if remaking it today, I think anytime remakes happen or sequels happen, there's a tendency to just up the ante in a lot of ways. Sometimes for good, sometimes for bad, but it seems like everything is more, there's more volume to everything, if you will. It's more extreme. So in the remake now, you wondered, would they have to delve deeper into the alienation of the two? Like, would they get farther apart and then come back together? And when they did, would it be stronger? Or, you know, how would that work? Do you want to talk a little bit about that, Jer, what you were thinking?
Yeah, well, I think you hit the nail on the head as far as the culture that we're in now, especially with movies and sequels and remakes and things. It's just everything's got to be bigger and more Michael Bay-ish than it was before, even though before it was John Hughes. Would that play? One of the things that makes this work, and thank you, John Hughes, for doing this, is that regardless of how annoying or upset, frustrated these two characters get, we still care about both of them. Mm-hmm. And would that go away if we were to remake it today in today's more intense movie culture where, well, I guess there's two questions. Number one, if we played it the same way and the characters ultimately blew up and then got back together and became friends and there was that resolution, would a blow up of that same style, you're annoying, people don't like your stories, you're boring, is that going to be too milquetoast for people? And is not going to be believable? And on the other side, if it was more than that, if the Neil Page character really attacked Del Griffith's character and really just tore him down, would we lose that empathy for the Neil Page character?
That would be a really, really delicate balance.
Yeah, I think there's such potential for creating movie characters that are unlikable, and then it's so hard to come back around to that. I think that's happening far too often in films nowadays. Like, it's like you have to go to such an extreme to get people's attention. And I think sometimes they can have a quirkiness to them that maintains some of that sweetness. But, you know, even at his most neurotic and his most sort of icy, Steve Martin is still warm, and John Candy is nothing but warm. And I think that if you lose that essence, it's going to change what the movie is. And it is very fiber in every way, shape, or form. And I don't think necessarily for the better. I mean, I think, yes, you might have to up the ante a little bit, but I think it really would be a tough line to walk to do that effectively and well. And I would just really hate to see anybody truly hate either of these characters. You dislike them in the original. You can see how they don't like each other, how they get along poorly. You know, I mean, but it's kind of sweet at the same time. And you know, maybe I'm just getting to be an old guy in saying that, but I think that it's just so hard to attach with a character and to relate to a character when you don't like him at all.
I think that in the remake of this movie, if we were to do that, I think we've hit enough points in the remake itself, in terms of setting, in terms of characters or casting rather, in terms of addressing, you know, we talked a lot about the whole internet question, that I think we could make it more, I don't want to say frenetic, but I think we could up the ante in a lot of areas of the movie without taking that relationship to such an extreme that it becomes a distracting emotional roller coaster. Because I think that, Jerry, I think you were right in that John Hughes did it so well that you were always attached to those characters, and you never felt like you wanted to give up on them either. And I feel like if everything in the movie was turned up a couple notches, that the warmth in those relationships would get lost in the noise a little bit. And, it would almost just seem like you're turning everything up for the sake of turning everything up instead of, you know, giving in any sort of shape and contrast to it. Does that make sense?
Yep. I have a great example too. Have you guys seen the movie Due Date?
I have not.
No.
I haven't.
Due Date is essentially a Planes, Trains, and Automobiles remake. It's Robert Downey Jr. as a high-strung businessman and Zach Galifianakis
as a
road-tripping guy with his little dog. Actor. He wants to be an actor. And Robert Downey Jr. is trying to get home for the birth of his baby. And all of these things happen that prevents him, and they end up kind of, hey, it'll work better if we do this together, and I'll help you. And it's plot-wise, it's a Planes, Trains, and Automobiles remake. Even character-wise, these two characters who are polar opposites, and they just sort of annoy each other. And finally, Robert Downey Jr. as the high-strung businessman loses it and blows up on him and tries to go it alone and realizes what he did and comes back and blah blah blah. They help him I mean, there's parts of it that are really funny. There's a part where Robert Downey Jr. slaps a 5-year-old kid that is hilarious. No, he doesn't. He punches him in the gut. And it is shockingly hilarious because you didn't expect Robert Downey Jr. to hit a kid. And he hit a kid.
Well, if there's one person I would expect.
That's true.
But it ultimately, I didn't like it as much as I have loved Planes, Trains, and Automobiles because everything Robert Downey Jr. is getting just the tar beat out of him in various things that happen and stuff, and it's all taken up a notch, and in that the humanity of the characters gets lost, and they try to come up with that same resolution where, hey, we're now friends and you're going to be my kid's godfather and we're going to hang out all the time and I'm going to help you get an acting job or whatever. And you just don't feel it the same way that you felt the tenderness of Del Griffith coming in the door on Thanksgiving and introducing him to his wife and his family and welcoming him into his home and his world and his life. And that's the John Hughes seal of approval right there. That Due Date as essentially a modified remake lost.
Did you know that Due Date does contain a Wilhelm scream?
I did not, but thank you, IMDb, for letting
me
know.
Don't judge me.
And for everything, really.
Seriously. Yeah, where would we be without the IMDb?
I don't.
Making
I don't
a pretty know. Podcast.
Gonna have to bleep that.
You'll
have to
you'll never
pretty
know
kittens
what I said.
Podcast. Kittens. I'll throw kittens over that. It'll be great. Making a pretty kittens podcast. That's actually the next Math is Hard podcast. I didn't get a chance to tell you guys, but it's the Pretty Kittens podcast.
It's the Pretty Kittens podcast.
It's just going to be an audio tour of pretty kittens.
So just meowing a lot.
I don't quite know how it's going to work, but it's going to be adorable. All right. Well, I think we did a good job covering that. I think those are really good discussions and good food for thought. So Jer, I know you know, sometimes when we're thinking about a movie, we think about, you know, advertisements and how you know, what it would be like if we were to take into account the plot lines of the movies that we're working on and maybe, you know, bring it into a quick 30-second ad read or something like that. I think maybe you've got something ready for that, don't you?
Well, thankfully, we do have sponsorship for our podcast that does exist.
It's true.
And
that is definitely real.
So that is definitely real and legitimate in every way. So remarkably so, this particular episode of Remaker's Remark is brought to you by Kevin Bacon Traveler's Insurance.
Oh.
travel debacles are inevitable, and it's nice to know that you're never more than 6 degrees away from help with the Kevin Bacon Traveler's Insurance. Lost luggage, damaged car rentals, downed planes on exotic and mysterious islands, or even Weekend at Bernie's type situations can be handled quickly and efficiently by the professionals at Kevin Bacon Traveler's Insurance. And they now have a new office in Stubville next to the People Train station. So give them a call. Kevin Bacon Traveler's Insurance. We'll make sure you make the six.
Wow. That's, I really
excellent.
I appreciate their generosity in sponsoring this podcast. That's really great.
Their beer cozies are excellent.
Yeah, I'm excited to work with them further or not. Well, that's great, gentlemen. I've had a really good time, and I think we've done a really, really excellent job of talking about Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Before we wrap up, does anybody have anything they want to add or discuss at all? Okay, perfect. Silence means everything is as it should be, right? Well, thank you again, audience, for sticking around with us here. We're really excited to be here with you, and thanks for tuning in again for the second half of this. What we're going to do is we're going to try to put out an episode 1 week, and then the second half the second week. Maybe we'll have some bonus episodes in the weeks in between, but then the first episode of the next movie will be a month after the first episode, for example, of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. So the next movie we're discussing, as Andy has chosen being the birthday boy and just being all around awesome, is Ghostbusters. So we've got that to look forward to. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us and see show notes, you can do so on mathishard.net. Look for the Remaker's Mark links there, and you can look for show notes there that show, for example, who we chose individually and as a group in terms of casting for the roles, any kind of links that we have there, any other information, maybe some information about the Kevin Bacon Travel Agency. We'll see if we can round something up. So definitely check that out. If you want to find us on Twitter, you can do so at mathishard.net. And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/mathishardnet. So, gentlemen, thank you again for all your time. And listeners, thank you again for sticking with us. And we'll look forward to being back shortly discussing Ghostbusters. Gentlemen, may the Force be with you.
And also with you.
And also with you.